AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. AgriTalk is brought to you by Simplot Grower Solutions. We're in your fields and by your side. Learn more at SimplotGrowerSolutions.com. Limit up, old crop corn. Solid gains across the grain and oilseed markets. Cattle were higher, feeders were mixed, and lead hogs were mostly higher, and most importantly, generated more upside momentum. Even milk and cotton futures were higher. And so was coffee and sugar, too.
Live from the luxurious Cloud Plains ecosystem via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we'll talk with Sean Hackett from Hackett Financial Advisors. In the final segment, Kerry Artek from Artek Advisory. Right after the news, Jack Scoville from the Price Futures Group. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Lorre.
I kind of feel gypped.
Gypped, you say?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I kind of do. I mean, yeah, it's 73 degrees. I appreciate that.
Right,
but
it's great.
It is a cloudy son of a gun out there, dude. I mean, no sun with it. What is going on?
I'll tell you what it is. We're gonna requalify this as an ecosystem, right? Like you hear all about the cloud forest of Borneo is a rich ecosystem with many diverse creatures, right? That's what I'm going with.
Okay.
You know, you ever watch those and you're like, man, I'd like to live someplace like that. Here we are. I didn't even have to move.
I get it. Yeah. That's crazy. It's crazy, man. I would love to get a little bit of sun rolling. I mean, today, if the sun would have come out, burned these clouds off at some point, it would have really been nice. And I think there's still the chance that that's going to happen later this afternoon. But, boy, oh, boy, give me some sun.
And I'm here to tell you, so it rained a little bit yesterday. Not a lot, but just, you know, wet, rainy-ish.
Yep.
For a little while, by about 6, 7 o'clock in the evening, planters were rolling. They were out. Yeah. They're like, you know what? Enough already. I'm rolling.
I needed a little bit of a shower like that for one reason. I had a brush pile that had been calling my name, and I torched it yesterday afternoon after we got that little bit of a rain. It was perfect.
Right.
It was,
Man. See, things are working out fine.
Clean things up a little bit. Clean things up. Yeah, but it was cold yesterday afternoon, though, I'm telling you. Commodity world on fire. Just look at all the foods, the softs, the grains, the oil seeds, the meats. Mm-hmm. It's all happening. I cannot wait for the conversation with Sean Hackett about this. It's pretty phenomenal what is going on throughout the commodity world. Okay, let's get to it.
Well, Chip, upside momentum was strong in the overnight session and carried right into the day session for wheat. Dry conditions in the central and northern plains limited selling interest, while strengthened global wheat demand helped to support prices. July soft red futures opened on session lows and quickly pushed to new contract highs. Export inspections of wheat in the weekend of April 22 totaled just over 564,000 metric tons. That was at the high end of trade expectations. Recent pressure on the U.S. dollar index also helped to support wheat prices. July hard red winter wheat, 28 and one quarter cents higher, 708 and three quarters. Jeez. July soft red surged 27 and a quarter, 739 and a half. September spring wheat, 20 and three quarters higher, 751 and three quarters. To the moon, Alice, to the moon.
It is really interesting. I like what you've been doing in the news, talking about not only what is encouraging the buying, but also what is discouraging selling, because I think just a lack of selling in these markets, it has as much to do with what we're seeing as anything else. It's pretty phenomenal.
Well, I am an astute market observer myself.
Yes, you are.
Corn export inspections of more than 1.95 million metric tons pushed through the top end of trade expectations. The big source of fundamental support for corn prices, however, are the dry conditions in Brazil and the forecast for more hot and dry weather for that country's safrinha corn crop. The threat to the Brazilian supply helped old crop U.S. futures gap higher and to settle up the 25-cent daily trading limit. July corn futures 25 cents higher, 657 and one half. September corn shot 17 and one quarter cents higher, 5.93. December corn closed at 5.68 and one quarter, up 17 and one half cents, baby.
Yeah, the threat to that Brazilian crop is incentive for the buyers to come in and buy. There's not much of a natural seller in the corn market or the bean market right now, but boy, mm-hmm. oh boy, the incentive to get on and get coverage is certainly in place.
And that July locked limit, like, really early, like right off the bat, didn't it?
Yeah. And then it traded off for a little bit. It did trade off limit for a bit, but it locked up pretty hard.
Expanded limits tomorrow on corn, 40 cents. I don't know if we can do 40 cents in one day or not. That'd be fun to find out. Export inspections of soybeans weekend at April 22, 234,000 metric tons, in line with trade expectations. USDA this morning also announced the sale of 120,000 metric tons of soybeans for delivery to unknown destinations in the 2021 and 22 marketing year. Strong global demand, strong U.S. bean basis, and what has turned into a bit of a slow start to the U.S. planting season all help support bean prices. Another surge in bean oil prices also pulled bean prices to the upside. July bean futures 23 and one quarter cents higher today, 15.39 and one quarter. August beans jumped 21 and a half cents, 14.89 even. Novi bean futures closed at 13.62, up 20 and a half on the day.
Yeah, that was a spectacular move. There is no question about it. And when you see how the momentum continues to build in that market, it's awfully impressive. But give us the cotton closes, and then we'll hold off on the livestock to the next segment.
Sure thing. Well, July cotton 42 points higher, 89.22. December cotton firmed two ticks, 84.95. Chip.
All right. Thank you very much, Davis. Let's bring in Jack Scoville, Price Futures Group. Jack, my gosh, what a start to the week. Where do we go from here?
Oh, I guess higher. We're getting into blow-off territory, I think, but it's a weather market. So if the weather stays dry down in Brazil, which it looks like it will, and if the weather doesn't improve out in the Western Plains, and it doesn't really look like it's going to, or the Great Plains generally, for that matter, then we got higher prices coming. We already know we got tight supplies in soybeans, and it looks like they're going to tighten up in wheat and corn pretty good. And, boy, it's just been something to behold, hasn't it?
Oh, it certainly has. I think you heard my comment about differentiating between, you know, a market where there's a lack of selling and a market when when buying is encouraged. But when you get both, Jack, like we've gotten corn right now, whoo, get out of the way, huh?
Oh, I guess. Yeah, well, and you have to kind of look at it. The Commitment of Traders report showing that both commercials and the funds are in there doing some buying. So, we haven't really found that price level just yet. And it'll be amazing once we do. I'm kind of worried about what the downside might be at that point. But for right now, it just looks like all systems are go.
Yeah. Yeah. There's more room on the long side for the funds yet, isn't there, Jack?
Oh, yeah, there is. They've got a pretty significant position, but they've had bigger. And, that's what's important to keep in mind. They've been bigger longs than they are right now. And yet here we are with the prices up close, banging on $7 here. We might get there this week. And, geez, with the fund still with room to add, the commercials having to cover, it's just been something.
Certainly has. Jack, thank you so much, buddy. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay, great.
You bet. Jack Scoville, Price Futures Group. Okay, this is going to be fascinating. We've got a lot of ground to cover with Sean Hackett, Hackett Financial Advisors, up next. You might already know that POET produces 2 billion gallons of bioethanol and 5 million tons of high-protein Dakota Gold animal feed each year. But did you also know that POET uses the same process to produce a suite of other bioproducts, like purified alcohol for cosmetics and sanitizing products, renewable CO2, and oil for renewable diesel? The market for green products made from crops harvested right here in the Midwest is growing at an unprecedented rate, and that means even more reliable domestic demand for your grain. Farmers aren't just feeding and fueling the world. they are growing sustainable solutions that protect the environment and preserve our way of life for future generations. POET believes in the power of agriculture to meet the world's most pressing needs. Learn more at poet.com/products.
We don't make the news, we render it. AgriTalk.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. Glad that you could be with us here this afternoon. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Got the news guy, Davis Michelson, with me.
Davis.
Yeah, yes. We're going to get into a conversation with Sean Hackett coming up here just as soon as we get the closes for the livestock markets. What you got there, Davis?
Well, let's start with the cattle's Friday cattle on feed report revealed a smaller than expected April 1 inventory, and that helped the cattle complex shrug off the negative influence of higher feed costs. June live cattle 55 cents higher, 116.27 1/2. October cattle jumped 72.5, 122.77 1/2. August feeders gained 40 cents to close at 150.30. On the snout side, good pork demand, expectations of continued Chinese buying interest, and an improving chart picture all helped lean hog futures close higher. June futures posted an upside reversal with a close near session highs. That should help the market climb to a test of resistance at the contract high near 110. June lean hogs jumped $1.12.5 to 106.85. August hogs up 115 to close at 102.30. Chip, interesting development I found out over the weekend. I happened to run into a Well, I didn't know he was a hog farmer, but he was wearing a sweatshirt from his hog farm. It was, yeah. I don't want to say who it was, but, you know, it was like Bob's Hog Farm or whatever.
Yeah.
And a
yeah.
thing on the side that said, "We make bacon." I was like, oh, okay, well, let's see what... I asked him. I said, "So how's the hog biz treating you?" He says yeah. he's having a heck of a time filling his barn. He's looking for feeder pigs really? And can't find enough pigs to feed out.
Yep. Yep.
I hadn't yeah, anticipated that.
It gets back to a couple of things. One of them being the PERS that we had to deal with over the winter months. Now the impact of that is backing off, and I would think that the pig numbers should be coming on, but you know, we keep looking for some expansion to come back into this market.
Yeah.
But dude, there's a long list of reasons why it's going to take a while to get expansion back in the market. And mm-hmm. one of them is the supply of pigs.
Right.
And then throw on top of that all the costs associated with putting up a new building right now. Holy
right.
mackerel, dude.
Oh, forget about it now.
Yeah. yeah.
We've been talking yeah. about that for a few years now. One of my first assignments for the landowner was to go yep. to a thing at ISU, and they're like, oh, man, the hog market's where it's at. You're going to see barns going up all over the place here. There's going right. to be more hogs than we know what to do with. And that right. was, what, 3 years ago?
Well, and we saw that. The expansion happened. But, boy, it's it seems to have shut off for now.
yeah.
Seems to have yep. shut off. All right, buddy. Hey, let's get into this conversation right now with Sean Hackett, Hackett Financial Advisors. Sean, it is good to talk with you again. How are you?
I'm great, Chip. It's really, really good to be on your show. And obviously a quite well-timed appearance with all that's going on right now.
Isn't this spectacular? I mean,
it is. And quite frankly, something we predicted a long time ago would actually be happening, as you know. So.
That's one of the reasons that I was happy to see your note last week, Sean, because I wanted to get you back on. You were on the short list for this week. And you've been one of the guests that we have on the show that has been calling for one of the more dynamic markets. And here we are, we're right in the middle of it right now. And when we've got the softs, when we've got the grains, when we've got the oil seeds all playing along at the same time here, Sean, it's hard to slow it down, isn't it?
It's really hard to slow it down, and you know, this is what a phase transition higher looks like. We've talked about this, I think, on your show before, and we've talked about it in our subscriber-based reports. We talk about this phase transition, 2006, 2008, 2010, 2012, 1971, 1973. You know, you get these periods where you move from one price level to another based on a confluence of factors that all come together to create this overriding bullish force that, that just takes a while for it to burn out. It doesn't burn out in 6 months. It doesn't burn out in 1 year. It actually takes 2 to 3 years before you burn that phase transition candle out. And we're nowhere near the end of a phase transition. We're going to have volatility. We could have some near-term tops. So we're not anticipating the end of this phase transition until the summer of 2022 is what our work suggests is when this particular dynamic move might reach a true exhaustion point here. So
okay. Now, when you say that, see, I'm with you. I'm with you on that. But I'm not in a group that is saying, listen, this corn market's going to continue to go to the upside. This bean market's going to continue to go to the upside. I'm in the group that is saying that the market fundamentals are strong enough that there's going to be profit opportunities offered by the markets into the 2022 crop and more than likely the 2023 crop, the way things are looking right now. But I know when you talk about these markets, most of the time you are thinking that prices are still going to go even higher, aren't you?
We do. But I think it's important to understand that what the pathway looks like. We went back and looked at phase transitions going back several hundred years. And we said, what are the characteristics? What does the pattern look like? The first pattern is in the mid-range of that 2 to 3 year cycle, you get an interim top, and then you get a very nasty, scary, heavy break. That comes up here in July, just as an example. That's where the path would say, based upon all the paths of phase transitions in the past, we'd be looking for some kind of an interim, important top here in July, and then a pretty nasty setback that a producer would not want to endure that, given the profitable prices that he currently has and probably will have even more so as we move into the drought cycle here in the U.S. So it does not mean don't sell anything, don't cash sell your grains, just hold on for dear life. But it means you need to be opportunistic. But also understand, though, we're not going back to three. We're not going back to just up and right, straight back down, that we are going to be moving higher over time, and the producer needs to keep that in mind to not oversell the 2022 crop. Many oversold this crop, Chip. They oversold. Yeah. They sold so much $3.80, $4, $4.20 corn. And they're going to be tempted to sell a whole lot of corn for 2022 now, and we would guard against doing too much of that kind of business with what we see with our natural climate cycle algorithm and what we see with the pattern of this phase transition. We'd focus more on making sure you get 2021 taken care of, but we'd be very, very light on doing too much for 22 at this point in the cycle.
Okay, even with what you said about July being a period where we will see some price pressure in here, are you talking about holding on to this 2022 crop until post-harvest marketing?
Well,
I'm sorry, 2021 crop. Jeez.
Right. So our belief is, based upon our weather work, we're going to have to trade the U.S. drought cycle first. We're in a drought cycle, La Nina, grand solar cycle, trough of the 12-year solar cycle, things we've talked on your program quite a few times before.
Yeah.
And that is going to reach a crescendo here in late June into July, meaning we have to trade. It's 100 degrees in Illinois. The pollination's burning up. We have no old crop. What's that going to look like? We have to trade that. We're trading all kinds of other things, but we have to trade that in order to place the likely yearly top for grain markets and especially the corn market. And so we want to be thinking about, and we're preparing our customers to be thinking about getting ready to market leading into and through that period of time. But we would not be looking to be making sales for the 2022 crop yet. A lot of people will be thinking about that. We think that would be a mistake. We focus on the crop, this crop, not the 22 crop, on this particular part of the cycle. So it doesn't mean we don't want to sell. It doesn't mean we don't want to market. But we don't want to market 1 to 2 years out yet. That we're going to reserve for 2022 prices when we think going 1 to 2 or even 3 years out on pricing your crop will actually make tremendous sense.
Right. Okay. It's all about timing and where we are in this transition that you're talking about. When you were describing that June, July market, triple digit heat in the Midwest, no old crop and a threat to the new crop. Hey, that sounds like more than $7 corn to me, Sean.
All we know, Chip, you know, that when we've had some really stressful times in the past, in 2012, we reached 8 for a little while, on the futures at least. We reached 8 in 2008 for a little while. I would argue, though, that we hadn't printed $25 trillion. Central banks hadn't done that in those times. We didn't have that kind of money floating around, you know, just looking to jump on anything that's moving. We didn't have post-ASF, post-African swine fever, this bulge in demand coming from China back then. We didn't have that. You know, we weren't in this grand solar cycle minimum weather volatility cycle that we're in, where this weather volatility is going to be greater than we've ever seen before. So I believe for sure, you know, that the prices we've seen in the past are certainly on the table. But it wouldn't surprise me, Chip, that if we would do something potentially much more than that.
Okay. All right. We've got a lot to talk about yet. Sean Hackett, Hackett Financial Advisors. The bulge of demand. Won't these high prices threaten that? We'll discuss that next with Sean.
American-based and family-run, Simplot Grower Solutions knows what it takes to keep a farm and your way of life productive and thriving. It takes field-proven insights backed by trusted technologies and products that help you get the most out of every acre. It takes a local ag expert you can grow with, a down-to-earth partner focused on your success. Head to SimplotGrowerSolutions.com and take the next step with us. Simplot Grower Solutions, in your fields, by your side.
It's time for headline news featuring some of the headlines ripped from pro farmers first thing today. Light sales at China's latest auction of wheat reserves sold just 7.8% of the wheat that was offered. Brazilian meat packers are seeking alternatives to corn in their feed rations. Grain export prices are on the rise for Ukraine. Russian wheat prices also on the rise. The exchange is raising margins on wheat futures. Some details of Biden's latest tax hike proposals are expected in Wednesday's address to a joint session of Congress. Congressional overpay. Restaurants spent much of the past year trying to win back customers. Now they're struggling to win back employees. That's according to the Wall Street Journal. Graham signals higher priced GOP infrastructure possibility. Be sure to go to tryprofarmer.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with me.
Hello.
And we are having a conversation with Sean Hackett, Hackett Financial Advisors. Just a reminder, at the end of the show, Kerry Artak, Artak Advisory, is going to be here, mm-hmm. and we'll take a look at what's going on the charts. But before we get back to the conversation with Sean, let's go ahead and recap how the markets closed.
Chip, July hard red winter wheat, 28 and one quarter cents higher today, 7.08 and three quarters at the close. July soft red surged 27 and one quarter, 7.39 and one half. July corn futures, 25 cents higher, 6.57 and one half. December corn closed at 5.68 and one quarter, up 17 and one half cents. July bean futures, 23 and a quarter cents higher, 15.39 and one quarter. Novi beans closed at 13.62. That's up 20 and one half cents. July cotton, 42 points higher, 89.22. June live cattle, 55 cents higher, 116.27 and a half. August feeders gained 40 cents to close at 150.30. And August lean hogs up $1.15 to close at 102.30. That's your quick market recap. Back to you, Chip.
All right. Thank you very much, Davis. Sean Hackett, Hackett Advisories, Financial Advisors. Sean, the comment that you made about demand and the strength that we have seen on the demand side of the market. See, I've always viewed it as demand provides the incentive to buy. Selling is prevented by supply side scares. So these weather risks that you're talking about, that's keeping people from selling. But if you're going to get people in here buying, you've got to have the demand surge. If we've got these high prices, where does additional demand come from, Sean? Because we got to shut it off at some point, don't we?
Well, there is an ebb and flow, Chip. I mean, one of the reasons we will have this correction when we blow the market off here in July is there'll be some demand destruction. Some of the ethanol plants will close down. Some of the cattle herd will be liquidated. I mean, there will be part of that that leads into the correction that's coming here in the fall. But why are we here from the demand side? It's really China demand, right?
Yeah.
And why has China demand come in so strong? And it really comes down to a permanent shift in feed rations there from the African swine fever debacle, where they said, you know what, 50,000 backyard operations feeding food scraps is no longer in vogue. We're getting rid of that, and we're going to go to these corporate farms, and we're going to put those rations back into the bean meal, the corn feed, the wheat feed, and we're going to permanently upgrade to that kind of a situation. And that's not going to go away. I mean, that's a permanent tectonic shift in feed demand from China. Our belief is we are not yet there to where their peak demand for that new cycle will be. And once it does get there, it's not like it's going away. It'll just flatten out. So if you have that kind of demand that we believe is fairly price insensitive, and you have ongoing weather issues that our natural climate cycle is telling us, then, you know, it's still going to be a situation where demand is going to be plenty, plenty strong against very, very tight supplies to keep these prices at an elevated level for much longer than we've been accustomed to for quite a long time.
You know, you said it right there when you basically said that China's demand for grains doesn't seem to have a whole lot of sensitivity to price, Sean. In other words, it's inelastic. I mean, where does that come from? Do they just absolutely decide, listen, we need it, doesn't matter what it's going to cost, we're going to buy it?
Well, when you have internal corn prices that have been $8 to $9 for a long time, they're just paying what they normally pay domestically.
Okay. Yeah.
So until our price trades at a premium to the feed prices in China, you know, what all they care about is getting the physical supply, getting those animals well fed, keeping the herd going. You know, and so we're not trading at a premium to China, and it doesn't look like we're going to be doing that anytime soon, which means at least the demand coming from China is going to continue to come at us for the foreseeable future. So what can we hurt? Well, we hurt the traditional things like ethanol, but now the big push with the new administration for biofuels is the in thing, and they want to keep pushing that. You know, maybe that's going to be a little harder to do this time than in years past. Okay. It's just one of those situations where, you know, it's going to be, you know, I heard you talk about how, you know, expansion in the hog industry mm-hmm. could take a little longer than normal. Well, you know what? Demand destruction may also take a little longer than normal because of these unique factors that got us here.
Yeah. Good point. Before we talk more about the weather, tell me about currency trade. What are you watching there?
The scary thing for us, Chip, is that if you look at the Brazilian real, which is the dominant a translator of inflation in our ag markets, if you look at a correlation chart, the real's been flat for a year. So this whole move thus far has really not been a currency inflation translation move. It's been strictly supply and demand moving this market up. Mm-hmm. We think there's a real compelling reason that the Brazilian real may be ready for turning up in a major way and having an uptrend. And if we get a 20 or 30 or 40% move in the real, then you would have to lop on the inflation price premium to our markets that we haven't even done yet. So there's a whole lot of things that could come in that have nothing to do with the fundamentals but are part of how U.S. prices get priced. We think the Brazil real could be a surprise reason why going forward prices are higher than we think they may, because we are now going to have to price in the Brazilian real translational inflation factor, which we haven't traded in a very, very long time. So
right. Okay. All right. I am looking for my sheet of paper because I need to ask you the question exactly right. Here we go. Scale of 1 to 10, Sean. Scale of 1 to 10. 1 is being record yields for corn and soybeans, and 10 is being 2012-like conditions. On that scale, what is your level of weather anxiety for 2021?
We don't believe it's going to be as bad as 2012. The drought won't be. That's our forecast has been that we would have an escalating drought. Some parts could be as bad as 2012, but we do not see an all-out everything underwater because we think August is going to be an improved month. We think August could actually break the drought, cooler temperatures, moisture coming in. We think it's more of a June, July drought, which impacts wheat, winter wheat. Eclipse winter wheat here in May, eclipse the spring wheat, and of course eclipse the corn crop. But we think the soybean crop could actually get bailed out. So we don't think this is a 2012 style drought. But in the scope of how tight we are, it's still going to be a very nasty drought and one that the market will not take kindly in the current environment that we're in. But I would not say we're looking for 2012. We're looking at a nasty drought, but not one that we think is historic, at least not this year. So
okay, so on this scale, it's not a 10, but is it a 7?
I think it's a 7. I would call it a 7, plus or minus 1. Yeah, I'm in the 7 category for that.
Okay, so give me some more detail. I know that you're a student of the weather. You're a student of things that influence and impact our climate on a day-to-day basis. What are you watching most closely?
Well, we're watching most closely, really, Chip, is next winter and the winter going into next spring.
Okay.
We think that we're looking at, and you talk about 1 to 10 for the drought scale.
Yeah.
We're at a 10 for next winter, meaning a winter the likes are as extreme as any of us have seen. We think we're looking at something where we could be having, we already experienced a little bit of how extreme cold in February that we experienced here. You know, some of this cold weather, and we had some chaos that developed in the country. That's nothing compared to what we think this next winter is going to bring in. We think it's going to be historic snowfall, record cold temperatures, polar vortex, months of polar vortex kind of weather like we saw in February, not just a couple of weeks. We worry, Chip, that if we lost power in many parts of Texas and other parts of the country on a couple of weeks of record cold temperatures, what's going to happen to our power grid if we have a couple of months of that kind of weather? What's going to happen to planting the grain crop if we have an extreme frost in late April into May? That's what really keeps us up at night, not only from what it means for prices, but it's a humanitarian side of the equation that really worries us. It's really, really worried about that this could be a serious kind of chaotic crisis situation that our country is just not prepared for, given our current delicate infrastructure.
Sean Hackett, I rarely sit here on the show and think to myself, my gosh, I hope he's wrong. But I am sitting here thinking, my gosh, I hope you're wrong. I mean, this if February was just a preview for Texas of what's coming this next year, they could start getting ready for it right now, and there's not enough time to get ready.
There's not enough time. Look, I tell everyone I talk to, all my customers, anyone that I speak to, I deeply, deeply hope that I'm incorrect. I would like nothing more than be proven incorrect by this forecast. I would still rather be fair. I live here in South Florida, as you know. I'd rather know a Category 6 is going to come directly hit me and be prepared than not know and get hit by a Category 6 hurricane. So I still would rather know that there's a good chance that this could happen so that I'm in a position to be more prepared, even as unsavory as it is that it's coming, than to not know it's coming and get blindsided and to have even worse consequences to it. But I agree with you. It is not a forecast. I mean, I've talked about this forecast now with you and others for years, and I've dreaded it. And the closer we get, I dread it even more. And now here we are on the precipice of entering it, and I'm really even dreading it even further. But nonetheless, the opportunity in markets, whether it's natural gas, whether it's winter wheat, I mean, it's going to be some chaotic, crazy markets because of this kind of a level 10 weather extreme that we see coming this winter and spring of next year.
My goodness. Okay, well, that explains why you don't want to get too aggressive with the 2022 crop marketings at this point, Sean. Well done. Well done, my friend. Again, I hope you're dead wrong, but we'll obviously be looking for verification this winter. Thank you, Sean. I appreciate your time, man.
Thank you so much, Chip. Always love to be on the program. And thank you so much for all the work you do for farmers. You're just awesome, and I love everything that you do. Thanks.
Thank you, man. All right, that's Sean Hackett, Hackett Advisory. Davis and I will be back with Carrie.
the best talkers in ag, including you. Join the conversation on AgriTalk. Call us at 855-4-TALK-AG.
Davis, I have been waiting for this segment since Friday. Okay?
Okay.
I mean, when we talk about Maycorn jumping, when Maycorn last week was up 70 cents, May beans last week were up $1.65. And those aren't the high volume markets that carry our tag from our tag advisory is going to be tracking. But it's it's a pretty good example of the big moves that we saw in the grain markets last week. And I am excited to get an update. On what's going on in this corn right now.
Let's RTAC attack these numbers, buddy. What do you say?
I love it.
I'm definitely pleased to oblige.
We're talking
July corn now. We rolled last week. And, I think I mentioned the show around 6:45. And we pushed through that. It's actually 6:44¾ this week. It's a long-term descending speed line, trend-defining line study on the long-term weekly chart that's projected off the 2012 high. It's at 6:44¾ this week. Now, we pushed through. We settled above it today, limit up again. The week is still young. But if we close above 6:44¾ on Friday by at least that 1% threshold that I like, in other words, 6:51¼ Friday settlement or higher, this market enters a longer-term secondary buy signal. And ultimately, 3 to 5 months from now, I would anticipate 8:34½. That's a big picture target that becomes a reality for me if we close above 6:44¾ Friday by that 1% margin. Along the way, there's, stair-step levels, 678, 737, 779, all respectable resistance levels that can contain perhaps monthly buying pressures. But overall, 834.5 becomes our next big picture target. Now, if we fall back later this week and close the week below 6:44¾, that I'm calling this kind of a topping process that could yield bearish, rotation as we continue into later spring, early summer. I think 550 even then in reach, say by the end, I don't know by the end of May, but certainly by the end of June, 550 even becomes a realistic downside target if we close the week below 6:44¾ July corn. 550 even able to contain selling well into summer, and that's a meaningful downside pivot point into later year. So I think I've covered the July corn. And while we're talking July corn, we might as well update you on ethanol. Back in January, I mentioned a kind of a long-term buy signal that had played out in ethanol. At that time, it was above 1.505. That's a long-term channel top that is now at 1.475, well below the market now. August ethanol trading 2.139. And in the show in January, I had mentioned that the 2.226 area or that formation is a realistic 3 to 5 month or a spring-summer objective. And we're now within reach of it. Not this week, I don't think, but you never know. If corn continues moving higher, then that 2.226 level, August ethanol able to contain buying really not only into summer, but quite possibly through the rest of the year. And from there, we can fall back to 1.475 within 3 to 5 months. But if we close above 2.429, it's actually 2.226. Nope. If we close above 2.226, then 2.429 becomes the next target. I'm sorry if I screwed up that resistance. It's actually 2.226 is the ceiling. We're trading 2.139 last. That is the area that can contain buying into summer trade. I'm looking at two different charts as I speak. Sorry about that, Chip. June live cattle posted a meaningful sell signal last week that remains in effect below 117.45. We're trading around 116.27 last, so we are still in sell signal mode. This is kind of a longer-term sell signal that over the next 3 to 5 months as we continue into later summer should yield 97.98 handle long-term support. On the way down, 108.95 is really considered a 3 to 5 week objective now that could contain selling through the balance of June contract life, but by that point in time, August will inherit that long-term weekly chart and sort of carry the day, if you will, down to 97.05, which is the 3 to 5 month downside objective that remains in effect below 117.45. Now, if you know, live cattle can muster a decent rally into later week and close the week back above 117.45, it shrugs off that that long-term sell signal. And with that, I would expect the June contract to reach 124.5 over the next few weeks, where it could actually top out into expiration. But overall, closing back above 117.45 at the end of this week would be, you know, sort of a failed long-term sell signal, in essence, a valid sign of strength into summer trade. I wouldn't be surprised to see the August contract under that scenario reach into the 136.5 area by its expiration. In other words, over the next 3 to 5 months. But bottom line with cattle, we're heavy into summer below 117.45, the upper 90s anticipated over the next 3 to 5 months. And that's really all I got, Chip, for today.
All right. Good stuff, Kerry. Yeah, I mean, these are some dynamic markets, and it doesn't really matter if we're talking about grains, oil seeds, or livestock. There's lots of activity and volatility in there. Don't forget, go to rtacadvisory.com. At the top of the page, there is an AgriTalk link. Click on that, and Kerry gets into some more detail of what we were just talking about. He's got it presented for you visually there. All right, Kerry, thanks,
thank you,
buddy.
Sir.
We'll talk to you next
week. You have a great week now. Take care.
You too. Yep. And bye-bye. You can get a 2-week free trial when you go to rtacadvisory.com. Davis, National Weather Service,
yes.
6 to 10 day outlook for May 2nd through Radio the 6th.
Oops, wrong button there. There it is.
Has above normal temperatures across
what?
Like most of the country. The highest odds of above Oklahoma of above normal temperatures, Oklahoma, southeast Kansas, but the Corn Belt is in it, man. The Northern Plains are
right.
In it. The precipitation outlook still calls for below normal precip. Southern Iowa, southern Nebraska, southern half of Illinois, and points to the south. We've got above normal precip expected in North Dakota, South Dakota, Minnesota, northern Iowa, Wisconsin, and northern Michigan. So there's a change in that pattern apparently coming as well. So, a lot to look forward to, and some warm up in the temperatures. Obviously, everybody is looking for that. Okay, guys, hey, for Davis and for producer Big Apple Joe Stackler, thank you so much for listening today. I'm going to be gone for 3 days. We're going to be saying goodbye to my mom. She passed last week, and got a lot of family and friends in, and we're going to celebrate mom's life on Wednesday. So, looking forward to that. Tomorrow morning, it's Clinton Griffiths and Davis. Tomorrow afternoon, Ted Seifert right here on AgriTalk.